This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag. How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. We've got a chilly, rainy day going here in Iowa. It feels like the first break in harvest for many growers across the Midwest. We'll get updates on key issues from Washington, talk a new innovative milk marketing platform, and get ready for tonight's debate.
Live from what was supposed to be a great day to grill out via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, then it's on to dairy farmer Lindsay Rux and Joanna Hunter of Dairy Management, Inc. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Man, you've got that right. You go back not too far, and we were supposed to be talking about temperatures in the 70s.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's 43 degrees.
Yeah, and here's the thing.
What? Yeah.
Now, I may catch some heat for this, but I was thinking over the weekend, hey, I should just take my lawnmower out to the farm and just park it there for the winter time. But then right. I pulled up the fence around my garden, and it's like the grass is really long around where the fence was. I thought, well, on Thursday, I'll get a chance. I'll just mow the whole thing, and then I don't know if it's going to get done now.
Yeah. Yeah. You might have to take the scissors out there, the pruning shears, and just get it done.
Well, I might. I might just leave it,
man.
You know?
If you get the scissors out, please, pictures. I've got to have it.
I'm not allowed to have scissors.
I forgot.
There have been incidents.
Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Well, and talking about that grilling, I made plans back on Monday, I think it was, and I've to get the grill out for another time. It's not like I put the grill away, but I was sure looking forward to maybe spending a little bit of time outside.
Yes.
But that's going to be tough to do. Hey, we've got the conversation with Grassley today, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. We had the conversation with him earlier this week, but we've got to get this. There's some very important updates in there that we want to get out. And
good.
It's a really good conversation that we've got with the senator for you here this morning. Looking forward to getting that out there for everybody. All right, man, what you got in the news?
Well, we've kind of talked about this on several different fronts, but here it is again. Farmers' financial situation has generally started to stabilize with the help of federal aid since the pandemic-related disruptions in the food systems during the spring and summer. That's according to Mark Jensen, president and CEO of Farm Credit Services of America. Jensen said that farmers in his region were already making adjustments to lower commodity prices and weather conditions when the coronavirus pandemic led to a further deterioration. Now, for some perspective here, Chip, non-performing loans represented 0.84% of loans in the second quarter. Compare that to 2% in 2009 and more than 20% during the 1980s farm crisis. So 0.84%, that's a blip on the radar.
Exactly. And that says a lot about why the tough times are different than what we had in the 1980s. But the stabilization that we're getting, the source of the stabilization is not what farmers are looking for. We just soon see the revenue coming from the marketplace instead of from those federal outlays.
Well, we're getting some hints of that at this point.
Anyway. That's exactly right. No, you're good point.
The U.S. State Department approved the sale of arms to Taiwan worth $1.8 billion, including missiles and artillery. The weapons will strengthen Taiwan's defensive capabilities in the face of an increasingly assertive China, which claims the island as its own. China's foreign ministry accused America of interfering in its affairs and warned of a, quote, legitimate and necessary response.
Yeah, and it could be on trade issues. It could be on trade is how China might respond.
The U.S. Customs and Border Protection said it found, quote, conclusive evidence that a Chinese company used forced labor to make extracts of the sweetener stevia, with American ports now directed to seize any shipments coming in. The agency revealed that a Mongolian company used convict, forced, or indentured labor to make the products that they are being or are likely to be imported to the United States, Chip. Yeah. This forced labor thing.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the issue and why China is such a bad actor in the global community. It's got to be fixed.
Yep. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden face off for a debate tonight in Nashville, Tennessee. As you said, this will be their second and final encounter. Apparently, more than 35 million Americans have already voted. The Commission on Presidential Debates said it will mute each candidate's microphone for 2 minutes as their rival answers questions. Chip, NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker will host the final presidential debate. She will be the first Black woman to moderate a presidential debate in nearly 30 years since journalist Carol Simpson moderated the face-off between George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Ross Perot in 1992. So they'll have the mute button fired up on this one. I wonder how that's going to go.
I think it'll be okay. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. But... Yeah. That 35 million, it could be as many as 50 million have already voted, and we could see as many as 150 million vote in this election. It's just shocking to me.
Well, and finally here, Senator Shelley Moore Capito and 14 GOP colleagues want EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler to use a general waiver authority to ensure the 2021 ethanol mandates account for the, quote, unprecedented collapse in gasoline demand due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The lawmaker said that EPA should use its authority to make sure that RFS obligations for refineries provide, quote, regulatory certainty for 2021, do not exceed the blend wall of ethanol's proportion, and account for the unprecedented collapse in demand for gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel resulting from the economic downturn.
Yeah, what they're looking for is a year-long waiver from the RFS. Ernst lost her mind on this one. Senator Ernst from Iowa, she absolutely lost her mind on this one. She's going to fight that one hard. Thanks, Davis. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
All right, let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, bud?
I'm great, Chip. I'm glad to hear you're getting a little rain there because we certainly need it in Kansas.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to get to you.
Well, I don't think so either. And in fact, interestingly, Kansas City has not had measurable precipitation in October. And that's a big deal. And in western Kansas and the panhandle of Texas, Chip, wheat pasture is basically non-existent, and that's having a big impact on feeder cattle prices. So, the increasing drought areas, lower future prices, they've all hurt stocker and feeder cattle prices, and the drought in the Southwest is forcing people to liquidate both cows and feeder cattle. So winter grazing, it's a big deal for the cattle industry because so many of those cattle come off wheat in the spring and go into feed yards. Yeah. And so these stocker operators are already looking at a loss. And so sometimes if you're looking at a loss and the market's going cheaper, you can buy more cattle to kind of average it out and make. But if you don't have any place to graze those cattle, there's no way you can make that work.
That's exactly right. Yeah, one thing that I'm watching for already, Greg, is signs that we're starting to move some cows out of that area to where we can put them out on corn stalks. We could put them out on grass, but I haven't seen a lot of that movement yet. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it, buddy. That is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got a conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley coming up next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Performance Beef, easy-to-use cattle management software.
With so many corn herbicides on the market today, it can be really difficult to choose which one is right for you. I'm joined today by Steve Gomm. He is corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, what factors are most important to consider in choosing the right corn herbicide?
Well, you want to treat this decision like any financial investment, because that's exactly what it is, an investment in your farm. Start with a thorough evaluation of your herbicide options and how they align with your goals before making that purchase decision. If your goal is to maximize yield potential, you'll need to choose a herbicide that can help you do that, as not all herbicides can do that.
Yeah, that's right. So when we're doing this evaluation, what are the key factors to consider?
Well, obviously input cost may be a factor, but growers should consider the spectrum of weeds to control, the length of residual, application flexibility, and the potential return on investment. They can ask themselves three key questions. Will the program be efficient? Does the program make financial sense? And are the herbicide brands proven and reputable?
Yeah, excellent checklist there. So which corn herbicide checks all of those boxes?
Well, going back to those three key considerations, Acuron herbicide is the only one that unlocks that corn's full yield potential. So it has the longest lasting residual to help fully protect yield potential and minimize the weed seed bank for next year's crop. Syngenta and university trials have shown Acuron out yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre. And lastly, Syngenta stands behind its products and has multiple resources available to help answer any questions or concerns a grower or retailer might have.
All right. Check, check, and check. Thank you, Steve. That was Steve Gomm. He is the corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about what to consider when selecting your corn herbicides for 2021. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. An increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how POET is using corn from local producers to change the world. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Trust in Food for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Very honored to have Senator Chuck Grassley from the state of Iowa on the line with us. Senator Grassley, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you, and you said you're glad to have me on the program. Very few journalists I talk to know much about agriculture like you do, so I'm glad to have you you interview me from time to time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, we appreciate all the time that you provide for us. There's no doubt about that. I bet you'd rather be back in Iowa with me right now.
I would be. In fact, normally, there haven't been very many weeks out of the 40 years I've been in the Senate during October of an election year that we've been in session. And you probably know why I'm in Washington now and why Joni Ernst is with me and she's not campaigning. And if I was in Iowa, I'd be campaigning for her because we kind of campaign as a team, even though I'm not up for election. But anyway, we're here because of the nominee to the Supreme Court. I'm glad to do that. Joni and I don't miss votes. Iowans expect us to be here and vote, so that's why we're here instead of campaigning.
Yeah, you're kind of the Iron Man of not missing a vote, Senator. That is very true. So are we to expect a party line vote today on to advance the nomination?
Yes, that would be. That would be right. Probably 1 o'clock.
Okay. So what happens next with the nomination then, Senator?
Well, I'm going by what Leader McConnell said.
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekend, including Friday, we will be working on it. Normally, you know, we don't work Saturdays and Sundays.
Yep.
Sometimes we don't have session on Friday even. But we're going to work through the weekend and probably vote sometime Monday. On, she'll be a member of the Supreme Court either 8 days before the election or 7 days before the election.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. What do you make about presidential candidate Biden not being willing to answer the question about packing the court?
Can I define what packing the court is? And the only other time this has come up in history would be in 1937 when Franklin Roosevelt was president and he didn't like the Supreme Court and he wanted to put more members on it. But Democrats of his own political party stopped him from doing it. So now we have Democrats again talking about packing the Supreme Court. What that means is since 1869, we've had 9 members, and they're talking about putting a 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th member on the court because they don't like it that there's a 6-3 conservative versus liberal division on the Supreme Court. And so they prefer more liberal control of the Supreme Court, just like the Supreme Court is a political body. But there isn't anybody listening to your program that studied 8th grade civics that know that the Supreme Court is not a political body. It's a judicial body, and it's meant to be a check on the political branches of government. So the Supreme Court's not supposed to play politics. Right. And they're supposed to look at the law and look at the facts of the case and make a decision based on those two things. Some people would say, well, you know, Congress passed a law 40, 50 years ago, and they left something out. Then some people would argue, well, the Supreme Court can fix that. No, what the Supreme Court should do is say, Congress, you think the law needs to be changed? You need to change it. We shouldn't be filling in voids that the Congress forgot.
Right. Right, absolutely. I'm going to switch gears and talk about a different subject here, but I'm going to stay on Barrett, on Judge Barrett, because have you Googled Amy Coney Barrett lately? Because when you do, you've got to scroll down that page a long ways before you find anything positive to say about Judge Barrett.
Is that right?
Yes, and I use Google Senator, and this has got to be one of the most blatant examples of Google trying to influence the information that I've ever seen.
Well, I'm not aware of what you told me, but I believe you, and it doesn't surprise me. So that's why it's easy for me to believe you. And it's kind of true of a whole bunch of San Francisco West Coast monopolies. And by the way, today the Justice Department announced some antitrust action that they're going to take against Google. So it's appropriate. It ought to be taken against Facebook and Twitter as well, because, you know, they're censoring the press because, you know, mostly young people get their news from the social media platforms. And when Facebook and Twitter won't let anything on about the Hunter Biden and the Biden's peddling influence through the vice president's office, then that's censoring. And, you know, they didn't censor anything after they found out that the Steele dossier, that was claiming that Trump was under Russian influence, when we showed a long, long time ago that that wasn't true. They still peddled that information, and it ended up being Russian disinformation. And there's nothing Russian about what we're talking about, Hunter Biden. And so they got a double standard, and they want to censure the press to make a case so Biden will be elected. In other words, they hate Trump.
Yep. Yeah, that last statement right there kind of sums it up pretty quick. By the way, President Trump will be on the debate stage tonight. You want to coach him up? You got any advice for him?
Yeah, pretty simple. He's got a lot of good points to make, but he makes them in a way where it doesn't come across clear. So I'd like to have him have five short statements of what he's accomplished the first 4 years. I'd like to have five short statements how he disagrees with Biden or what Biden's trying to do, and then five short statements of what he's going to do over the next 4 years if he's reelected.
That's pretty solid advice right there. The tactics of the debate commission in changing up some of the rules, I don't think that's going to have a major influence on either Trump or Biden, is it?
I don't think so, but remember, no. I don't think it was part of the rules 4 years ago, but they shut off his mic a couple times when he was debating Hillary, and he still won, and so I don't think it's going to be a problem this time when he goes on to winning as well.
Gotcha. Last topic that I feel like we've really got to get to here, Senator, is the SREs, the waiver requests. When you look at the outstanding waiver requests or pending for 2019 and 2020, there's 34 combined out there. What's the status on that? When should we expect to get word on what's going to happen with those requests?
Well, let me separate your question from a question you would have had a month ago.
Okay.
And, you know, that was about the gap waivers. And you know how hard Joni Ernst worked to get the president to do away with about 50-some gap waivers. So you're asking me about 34 that have been there before.
Yeah.
Since these other gap waivers have been denied, we don't have to worry about them into the future. But for the 34 that are there, I would think that the EPA would have to be reviewing them all based on the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals opinion that said that they had granted some waivers that weren't appropriate. But let's suppose they granted every one of the ones that were that got court or that weren't brought up in the court. We still was promised September 12th, 2019 in the Oval Office of the White House that every waived gallon is going to be added back in. So what we aren't so concerned about what they might waive. We're concerned that it gets added back in as we were promised by the President of the United States. But I don't think that decision is going to be made until you get into December, because maybe they don't know what to do. And I would there's one thing that they do have to do about past waivers, though. There was a 500 million gallon decision that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals said that they shouldn't have granted, and so that's got to be added back in on top of that 15 billion gallons that we were promised. Well, not only did the president promise, but it's the law. Trump stands with the Iowa farmers on this ethanol issue, and he proved it when the gap waivers weren't granted.
Okay. Excellent work, Senator. Thank you so much for the update, and take care. And boy, I just hope that it's a fair debate that happens tonight between President Trump and former Vice President Biden. I think that's the most that we can hope for right now.
I hope so, too. Goodbye.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. That is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh. I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, that November bean contract got out above the high that was posted earlier this month, trading over 1080.
Yeah, that's a critical level on the weekly continuation chart. So we'll need to see where we, if we can hold above that into the close. But good, strong gains. And I think that weekly export sales were really strong again. China was the biggest buyer there, not a surprise. But really, a lot of the price support is also coming from the meal market. And we've talked about that this week, but it continues to be the case. Meal just explosive to the upside, trading more than $10 higher in the December contract and lending a lot of support to the soybean market at the moment.
Yeah, very good. We've got some strength in the corn market, too, with that Dease contract knocking on the door at 420.
Yeah, very good export sale for the week. And I think the big thing there is that China was a big buyer, and we've seen China and Mexico come in, but some of the other countries that maybe had turned a little bit more cautious with the price move up returned as buyers. So I guess we can't say that prices are choking off demand just yet by any means. And so the corn market's well supported from that standpoint.
All right, take us over to the livestock trade. What do you got going?
Well, it's pretty ugly, to be honest with you. So far this morning, we're seeing a continuation of the fund liquidation that we've seen in the cattle market here with moderate to sharp losses in most of those contracts. So, like I said, just a breakdown here technically, and the funds are getting out of length in that market. The hog market also under pressure. That's despite some pretty decent weekly export sales, though they were down well below what the previous four-week average was.
Got it. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which comes out to about 2 billion reasons why you should be encouraging people to use biofuels. If there was enough demand for biofuels, not only could we address these problems, that corn surplus could quickly help ag producers like you improve your operation. So help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
ShopMachineryPete.com and you may be qualified to receive a $25 Visa gift card or a limited edition Machinery Pete hat for free. Go to MachineryPete.com now and check out Shop and Score to learn more.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Joanna Hunter, DMI, and Florida dairy producer Lindsay Rucks. We've got a conversation coming up with them. But before we get to it, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Brett Andrix. He is the Director of Strategic Sales for AGI SureTrack. Brett, to make farms more efficient, we are pulling data from so many different levels, aren't we?
Operators, growers, they're managing a full-blown operation today. It starts with managing your ground and selecting the seed, and then you've got to manage it all the way through to marketing your grain. And they're looking for something that helps them make decisions, provides them data. They want something that's easy to use and accessible anywhere. They want to be able to make better decisions. Obviously, the end game is to be more profitable, and they want to be able to communicate to the right people, and they want to be able to reach out and understand what their data is telling them. in order to do that, you know, there's a lot of options out there. And, you know, to make the right decision on what option's best for them can be a tough decision. That's what drives us. We want a platform that can help them all throughout that process. We want to increase their efficiency, provide them that real-time data, and we want to help them make better decisions. And we want to help them be able to communicate to the right people, you know, whether that's an agronomist, a farm manager, a retailer, merchandiser, processor, wherever along that path of the grain supply chain. And we want to connect all those dots. That's why our platform is, we feel like, the right decision, because it has information throughout that entire process. Everywhere along the way, we try to provide them data where when they go to make that decision, it helps them be more profitable. And that's what we're all about. We're just trying to drive value back to all of our users, whether you are a retailer or a grower.
Excellent, Brett. Thank you so much. Where do we go to learn more?
Go to agisuretrack.com. We have an opportunity on there at agisuretrack.com/connect that you can have a free trial. We always want to have somebody accessible to you. If you got questions, we're going to get you an answer. And we're going to walk you through it, and we're going to educate you on how to use our platform so it's easy for you to use and does what it's supposed to do for you.
Excellent, Brett. Thank you so much. That's Brett Andrix. He is the Director of Strategic Sales for AGI SureTrack. We are always looking for the innovative marketing programs in agriculture. Earlier this week, we talked with Tim Lust, National Sorghum Producers, and some of the things that they are doing there to build a domestic market to encourage that export market. It's fantastic work. We've got some more of that fantastic work to talk about right now, only we're going over to the dairy industry. Let's get this started. We've got Lindsay Rux. She is a dairy farmer in South Florida, joins us now. Lindsay, welcome to AgriTalk.
Welcome. I'm so excited to be on.
Excellent. We're gonna hear about what you've got going here in just a little bit. Joanna Hunter is the Executive Vice President of Communications for Dairy Management, Inc., DMI. Joanna, thank you so much for making time.
Thanks for having me. Can't wait to talk to you about our program.
Oh, well, let's get right into it. This is a program, it's got to be to connect to some of those younger consumers out there, right?
That's right. This is a program that we are using to connect to Gen Z, and we're really, Gen Z spans a pretty wide range, but we're really looking at the late teens to early 20s and reaching them in a whole new way where they're engaged, which is on gaming platforms.
Yeah, and not just engaged on the gaming platforms, but with the gamers themselves is where the engagement is going to be happening, right?
That's right. So we have partnered with four influencer gamers who have a tremendous audience, a reach of over 120 million, and they are visiting virtually a variety of different farms, including Lindsay's, to learn about dairy farming and to share the dairy farmers' great stories with their audiences.
What's the goal here, Joanna? What's the ultimate goal? What are you trying to accomplish with this?
Well, you know, Chip, we really know that this is a generation that cares about sustainability, and we also know their passion for gaming. So what we're really trying to do is to connect them to where their food comes from, to increase awareness, and to build trust in dairy, and to help really drive sales and trust for dairy overall.
Yeah, so it gets right back to the sales, but that connection, getting them connected back to the farm, oh boy, if there's any way that we can figure out how to get that done so that they do build that trust, obviously we need to make that happen. Lindsay, tell us about your farm down there in South Florida.
Well, we are in sunny South Florida, a fifth-generation farm. We have about 1,000 acres, and dairy is just really in my blood. It's a passion here on the farm. We have six family members, and every day we strive to do the best we can for not only our cows, but the environment.
How many generations, Lindsay, since it's in your blood?
I'm fifth. Quite a few. Yes, sir.
Yeah, no kidding. And you've got a program down there on your farm that you connect to consumers using ice cream, right?
Yes, that's correct. The ice cream is getting around then. So my family has always been passionate about telling our story. And where this all kind of started with is we wanted to get people on the farm. We wanted our consumers to meet the farmer, to realize that we're people just like they are. Yeah. So we started with field trips, and that's kind of evolved and turned into a on-farm creamery where we're making handcrafted ice cream.
Cool. This is all about transparency is what you're talking about, Lindsay, and it's giving consumers an opportunity to see a real live working dairy farm and have enjoy some ice cream while doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the first things we always tell people when they come is, you know, this isn't Disney World. We're very close, but not quite the same. it is a working farm, and there's great days and there's not so great days, but we just like to share our experiences and show them how much farming really means to us and how much pride we take in the product we produce.
Yeah. Lindsay, what do you think of this, the program that Joanna has described? I mean, is it do you think it's going to be a worthwhile effort?
Oh, absolutely. After I got over the fact that it made me feel extremely old, that I didn't quite even know what these gamers were doing, I did a little research and I dug in, and I was really blown away. What they're doing and the platform that they have, the audience they reach, really is incredible. And I know Bree, the gamer that I did the virtual tour with, she was truly interested in what goes on the farm and where her food comes from. And I think it's that connection is going to be a great thing for the dairy industry and possibly all of agriculture in order to get our story and change the narrative a little bit with this generation.
Right. Joanna, Brianna Plays. 6.9 million total reach.
That's right. And, you know, she has that reach. Her husband, Preston, has 35 million, and they play off of each other. So it's not just one influencer's reach. It's how they work together and challenge each other with this gaming.
And so and Preston is part of the promotion effort, too. And then you've got Matt Smith, 13.8 million, and then the big dog, Mr. Beast.
That's right. 71 million.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that they've got that kind of a platform through gaming. But, you know, I know some of the some of the young people that participate in this and they follow these gamers very, very closely. Lindsay, what was your takeaway when you gave Brianna the tour, the virtual tour of your farm? What do you think struck her most intently?
I truly think she was blown away. She actually had her grandfather used to have a dairy, and while she did not have any connection to that farm and never actually had been there, he had closed before she was born. She knew that they're a little bit of a background. And I think it just kind of blew her mind when she realized, you know, what all goes into farming and the number of practices that we have here on the farm and how well we take care of our cows. She was a little bit in awe. It's definitely a lot to take in. And you could just see it, like, in her eyes. Yeah. She was just like, oh, my gosh, you know.
What were a couple of the questions that she was most interested in?
She was just really curious about, you know, the different ways we take care of our cows. We recycle a lot of water here on our farm, which is very important here in Florida. And that to her was really neat. The fact that we're able to reuse and recycle and make sure that we're leaving the environment for the next generation.
Nice, nice. So the message that she's going to be taking out there and delivering, you're pretty confident that that's going to be a positive message?
Definitely, I would say so. I actually asked her as the tour was winding up, we had spent some time in our calf barn, and we use auto feeders in there, and she really liked that and couldn't believe the technology there. And I asked her if it would be okay, and I have a calf now that's named after her. So I definitely think there's a lasting impression there. So we're going to keep in touch, and I'm going to send her updates and pictures and different things like that.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Lindsay, keep up the good work down there and keep that relationship going with Brianna. That's going to be really cool. Joanna, take 15 seconds. Turn this into returns on the dollar spent.
Well, what you're going to see is these gamers who have incredible reach actually build dairy farms in Minecraft. They're going to challenge each other, and they're going to challenge their followers. So you're going to start to see this next generation understand dairy farming in a new way and really build trust and connect them back to dairy farmers.
That's fantastic. I cannot wait to see this all develop and take place out there. Lindsay, thank you. Joanna, thank you. We appreciate all you guys are doing. We'll be back with more Ag. We're talking in just a moment.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Valent for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to Agri Talk.
Can we just listen to Ted Nugent for the next month? Can we just do that? That would be great. That would
be fantastic. Yes.
I'm down.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. I want to go back to the conversation that we had with Senator Grassley and the advice that he offered up to President Trump for tonight's debate against Vice President Biden. How structured would that be? And if he would follow Senator Grassley's advice, have he knows what the topics are. I don't agree with the topics that are set for the that are set for the debate. We're missing a couple of very important topics, foreign relations being one of them. But he knows what the topics are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Structure the opening statement. Structure a response, because you know what Biden is probably going to say, or at least focus on, and be prepared for a closing comment on that topic as well. How shocking would it be if shocking and potentially effective would it be if President Trump would just follow the rules, present structured statements, and move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You like that?
I don't know. I'm a little bit torn. Here's the thing.
Okay.
The way that our country is right now, it's all about the surface things. A lot of people hate Trump just because of the way that he acts, the way that he says things, without really having a clear understanding of the issues that are driving his policies, that drive his decisions. And the same is equally as true for Joe Biden.
Right.
However, so if he were to come up and just talk issues and just say, these are my five things, as Senator Grassley suggested, and just leave it at that, well, then there are those who would say, well, he's not a fighter. He's not fighting back. He's just kind of, well, he's just laying out his ideas. People don't want ideas. People want, and I think
we're here for the show, not for the
yes,
not
and
for
that's
the meal.
The great risk. We're not here to get to know these guys. I don't care who these guys are as people, as a voter. I care about the changes that they will affect and the policies that they will enact and support through their presidency. I could care less if they show up in a scuba suit. If they can get good stuff done for the country, and that's the point that is getting completely lost here, I think, in the whole, I don't know, am I off base?
Not really, but I think if President Trump shows up with his prepared statements rather than making off the cuff, well, here's what I think about tax policy, okay? Fiscal policy, stimulus, instead of making the off the cuff, I think he should be very prepared to answer and to make his opening statement when they talk about the coronavirus.
Yes, yes.
He better be prepared for that and stick to it.
A more structured approach would definitely help out his credibility.
On that front, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, Can I offer some advice to the president too?
Oh, please do. Yes.
You got to
let listening.
You've got to let Vice President Biden speak.
Yes.
Got to. And press him on the tax plan. Press him on, find some way, somehow, to have, I want the conversation to happen about Hunter Biden. This is the story, and I'm walking on thin ice with some of you, I know. But this is the story. This is similar to the story that was constructed, made up, about the Trump family.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
No. No.
Okay.
I don't know all
the facts, but here's one thing that I do know about Hunter Biden, the story on Hunter Biden, is Joe Biden has not tried to discredit the story, has not tried to dispute the story.
Right.
I want to hear his argument on this.
Yep.
That's why I hope President Trump pushes him on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it does creep me out that social media shied away from that story.
Big time.
In the way that they did.
I hate that.
We all know that when you want cattle to go a certain way, you provide a narrow a narrow avenue for them to go.
Absolutely.
So they only have one choice. And the same is true of your thought life. If you keep it narrow, sure, you'll wind up in a place, but you got to ask yourself, who's driving?
Right. Exactly.
You know, who's driving me down this narrow alley and why?
Right. Okay. We're getting some comment here from the news director at Farm Journal, John Harris. The author shied away from the story too. He didn't put his byline on it. But I am not saying that it is 100% true. What I am saying is that I want to hear Biden's response to it.
Yes. Yes.
I am willing to listen to it. And I haven't heard a response.
Mm-hmm.
And the silence is deafening on this.
It absolutely is. And here's the thing. So many people, and maybe I'm wrong on this, Chip, so many people want there to be Chip's definition of the truth and Davis's definition of the truth. And we all can kind of have our definition of the truth. There is one truth, factual. And that's what I want. I don't care what it is, because the truth will stand on its own.
Right. Yeah. You are so right. So right. We're going to continue the conversation about how things might be different after Election Day, too. We'll find spots to do that. We started it yesterday afternoon. Got to come back this afternoon. We've got Ryan Wagner from Bolt Marketing. And what do you think about tomorrow morning? Free for all. Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney right here on AgriTalk. Harvester. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.